Hi, my name is Kyle Michoulis, and this talk was going to be called Too Much. But as with every other talk I have ever given, they ask me for a name for the program, and then a week later, I change it. So now I was going to call it I Am My Own Console, because this is a talk about biometrics and video games. And for once, I'm not talking about sex toys. And I think this makes me the only happy person about that in the room. But even so I was thinking about it, and I really want these games to be fun, and I want people to play them all the time. So I was thinking maybe the title could be I Am My Own Console, and I Play With Myself All Day Long. But that might be a little suggestive. So anyways, I run a couple of websites. First off is Non-Polynomial Labs. This is the site about everything I do, be it game controls, haptics, generative audio, driver programming, robots, whatever else. This other one, /dong, is my site about sex and technology. These are basically the last two sites I have that I update. And what have I done? I've done a lot of stuff, really. In terms of video games, though, I did some work back like 2004, 2005 on creating immersive interfaces for Second Life via really cheap exercise equipment. So I built an exercise bike that you could ride and it would make a vehicle go in Second Life, or a treadmill you could walk on and you could walk in Second Life to make exercise slightly more interesting if you were still afraid of actually going outside. And then I also, there's the exercise bike again. Last year here at Robo Exotica, I created a project called Adult Mario, which was immersive Super Mario Brothers that would serve you drinks. So basically, anytime you get a coin while playing the game, it'd give you a little bit of rum. Anytime you killed an enemy, it'd give you a little bit of Coke. And anytime you died, it would dump water in your drink. And it had an immersive environment system around it that had fans so you could feel the wind in Mario's face as he ran. And there was lights that would match the color of the sky that he was seeing. And when he slid down the flagpole, there was a vibrator. So anyways, those are the old games, but man, kids these days, and their video games, I just don't get it anymore. I mean, all they're looking at these days is graphics, which look much better in a darker room. So, I mean, what they're looking for is realistic experiences that they don't want to have, but want to have. Like war games, for instance. Call of Duty, Modern Warfare is one of the most popular games out there, or a popular game series out there right now, where you run around and shoot people for a variety of reasons. Whether they are justified depend on your political leanings. Or driving games, for instance, where you can really, and this last generation of consoles are the ones that added that last really, almost drive a car. They've got all the physics, all the sounds, everything else. All you're missing is the car itself in the real world. But it still sort of gives you that immersive experience of sitting in front of a screen with a thing that's probably not a steering wheel, driving a thing that looks like a car that's actually rendered just through a lot of math. And really, what do these games exercise? These games exercise mostly our sense of sight, and oh my god, it's such a sight these days. We have really awesome televisions, like huge LCD panels for under €1,000 now that, I mean, take up your whole living room wall and screw with your peripheral vision because they're so big and they are completely immersive. They might as well just eat your head. And then we've got sound, too. We've got multi-channel sound, and I really wish every speaker looked like a little penguin. But, I mean, there's like 7.1 sound now, so you can have spatialization wherever you want, and maybe the car right next to you really sounds like it's 3 feet away or whatever else. So, okay, we've exercised two senses here. We've got vision, and we've got hearing. And now those two things right there can trigger a lot of brain chemistry to make things very immersive. I mean, if you can see it and you can hear it, there's a good chance that you're going to start falling into the rest of the senses. Now, granted, if you could actually like get like a tailpipe peripheral so you could actually smell the gasoline and stuff too, that might be cool. But really, there hasn't been a lot of work outside these two senses. And now we're starting to work outside of the game screen. This is the Ambiex system. This is what I used for Adult Mario to make the lights, the skylights and the fans, because that's really what this is. It's speakers with little LEDs on top so that, say, there's something happening slightly to the right of what is happening on the screen, and you can't render that on the screen. Screen's only so big. But you can actually use that light to trigger things in the player's peripheral vision to let them know there's something happening over there. You can't see it. Or to make the room lit like the room. Make the room lit like the room that you're in the game right now. So it's more immersive outside of the screen, but still you're just going with visual and a little bit of haptic when you get, for instance, wind in your face when you throw a grenade and it explodes or something like that. We've moved a little bit into the realm of touch these days. This is the Novant Falcon. Sometimes I provide absolutely no explanation whatsoever of how this thing works, because usually people's implementation of it in their imagination is far more interesting than what it actually is. This is what's known as a parallel robot, and you can move this little thing right here, this grip, back and forth, left and right, up and down, and like a little 4-inch cube workspace. And there's force feedback motors on each one of these joints. So you can actually feel textures in 3Space. Like there'll be like, they'll render a little virtual sphere in the middle of the workspace that you can push against, but you can't actually push through. Or you can make different textures on it, like ice or sandpaper or whatever else. So we're starting to incorporate more senses there, but it's still not a fully immersive, fully sensual experience yet. That's a really weird way to use the word sensual. So, and also in games, if we look at mechanics and plot, look at how many things are going on now too. For instance, Grand Theft Auto. Everyone is pretty much aware of this game in one way or another now. It's become sort of a cultural centerpiece, especially in the U.S., due to all the controversy it caused. But if you look at that versus much older games, now you've got all these plots to deal with. You've got to drive a car, and then you've got to shoot some things, then you've got to shoot some things while driving the car, and then if you shoot the things, that affects the plot later, things like that. So there's all of this confusion and things going on that actually make for a very deep plot, but how immersive is it? Is it like reading a story, or is it like actually being there? And then we mentioned Braid earlier, where instead of there's some plot in there, but there's also these really deep puzzles and everything else. So you're immersing yourself in the game, but what are you learning about yourself when you play these? That's the question. You get caught up in so many types of control and so many types of environment and all these stories and everything else that suddenly you don't quite know. I mean, it's like reading a story, but it's a completely external experience where you are controlling this, but you aren't taking anything back in. And so I get people asking all the time, oh, but what about the good old days? What about the days where everything was stripped down and we could jump on these things, and then we collected these things and it was done? Well, you weren't learning that much back then too. So really, what can we do to alleviate the loss of sense of self in video games? What can we do to make a game that actually involves ourselves and what we're doing right now outside of pressing some buttons and having some sort of control, like external control that is not directly related to us, to make a game that teaches us more about ourselves? And that's really what I've done, and the rest of this talk actually is about two examples that I've come up with of small games using biometrics that can allow you to use your body as the game console instead of going outside of that and using an Xbox or whatever else. Because you're a hell of a lot cheaper than the rest of the electronics. So first off, let's go into biometrics. Just to give you a quick definition, biometrics means a whole bunch of different things. I totally copy and pasted this from Wikipedia. because biometrics, there's two things that it can mean. It is, basically, there's identification or there are metrics and statistics. Identification are the things you're used to seeing in terms of, like, put your thumb on the pad and start your laptop. Or retinal scan technology, which is actually becoming slightly less sci-fi. But what we're interested in here is what can biometrics tell you about yourself? This is the stuff that you usually get hooked up to in your doctor's office. And this used to be stuff that only your doctor's office could afford, but these days we're actually starting to see this come out into this consumer market. And really, biometrics has been used for just about forever, as this really old Asian guy signifies. And it's used to tell very important things. I mean, well before we had electronics and all of these, and chemistry and everything else, you could put your hand somewhere on a body and tell, hey, this guy is dead. and that is the sense of biometrics, but that sense of biometrics gives you your sense of self. If your heart is beating really fast, you end up in a heightened state, you may get tired. I mean, there's context behind that that's going to cause different brain chemistry reactions because you may be running from something, or you may be running for something, or you may just be really tired, or maybe you need to get more exercise and really you're just sitting down. Who knows? But that context plus what's happening in your body right now is what lets you know you're alive. And if you don't know that, well, you might very well be dead. And really, everyone likes to think, hey, I am a special snowflake, though. Like, there's something about the human experience that makes me stand out and that makes me part of a special part of this unique universe of humans. That's some bullshit, because all of us have biometrics. All of us do have these same signals that, I mean, you have to have a heartbeat to be living. You have to have some sort of brain activity. There's multiple things going on in your body that are keeping you alive at all times, and we know how to monitor each and every one of those now. So really, we can just reduce all of those special snowflakes down to a certain number. And really, once you've reduced things to a number, then you can start playing with that number. And once you have that number, then you have a game. So, once you have that number, you also have controls. For instance, with the Atari actually beat most modern game developers to a lot of different types of control. This is an EEG helmet that was being prototyped for the Atari 2600 in 1981. So they were actually looking at doing brain control in the early 80s. And adding on to that, the picture I showed of the exercise bike earlier, that was based off of yet another Atari project called the Puffer Project, which was going to be an exercise bike you could hook up to your Atari in 1983. I did mine in 2005. They were really, really, really ahead of their time. Nowadays, though, we're looking at using EEG for all sorts of stuff because it's not going to cost you $1,000 just to get the control. It's going to be more like $100. For instance, this is the Jedi Mind Trainer by a company called NeuroSky. This is pretty much every Star Wars nerd's wet dream, because you put on this little helmet and you like stick your hand out and you concentrate, and this ball and this lightsaber rises, and there's some green like LEDs and stuff. Like, it was basically one of the hottest toys for Christmas last year, both in the children demographic and in the over 30 demographic. And it's, I gotta admit, it's really fun. and this is the NeuroSky SDK. I actually have that right here. That is what drives this toy. But Yeah, you totally can, because I forgot to charge it before I left, so I'm not going to be using it in this presentation. So basically, it's a headset with Bluetooth in it with a single sensor that goes right here, so you don't have the most accurate of responses through the EEG. It's a single sensor input. But even so, it can give you basic ideas about, like, how calm you are right now, how much attention you're paying, are you asleep, are you dead, things like that. And that only runs about $199, and the cool thing about NeuroSky is they're completely about open source software, so the whole platform is open down to the hardware level. They've actually published the Bluetooth protocol, too, so if you want to use it with the Arduino, there's already a module for that. They're really nice guys. However, they're not the only people in town. This is the Emotive helmet, which has 12 different sensors on it. Other than that, it's the same basic idea, and unlike NeuroSky, they encrypt the information coming out of their helmet, and if you want to get to all of the information, it will cost you $8,000. So, yay NeuroSky, Emotive. There's actually a project happening right now to reverse engineer Emotive's protocol, so we're hoping to have it cracked in the next couple of months, at which point, who cares? And then there's this thing called the Lightstone, which I actually have one right here, and we'll be using it later. This came with a game called Journey to Wild Divine, which I'll talk about in a bit. And it's a little USB widget that takes blood oxygen levels from which you can extract pulse. Because anytime you see that like little bouncy signal on like a doctor show or whatever else, that's actually, you're watching the amount of blood oxygen flowing through a certain point on the body. So, and that little spike is, okay, the blood got refreshed with oxygen because your heart just beat and pumped more oxygen through. So that's the signal we get from that, plus GSR, galvanic skin resistance, which is how much your fingertips sweat. So basically, this is a little USB lie detector. And it only runs about maybe $80 now. So in terms of what's already out there for biometric video games, this is Mindball. If you've actually been to the Vienna Technical Museum, they have this there. Each player puts on an EEG helmet and tries to calm themselves. So basically, you want a higher amount of alpha waves on the surface of your brain, which I know all of us can just sit there and do whenever we want. And there's this little ball in the middle of the table that kind of goes back and forth, and you're playing tug of war with it by being calm. The problem with this is it's $15,000. And then there's this is the reason that Emotive came out and what NeuroSky is also sort of working on, the idea of biometrics for external game control. Unfortunately, this still falls prey to what I was talking about earlier, of lack of sense of self in the game, because now you are just projecting yourself even more onto that avatar. And the reason that I have the Harry Potter video game here that you can't see real well is because their demo of this is usually, like, say you're playing Harry Potter, obviously you're going to cast some spells. And usually you would hit a button to cast the spell. And really, what magician movie or fantasy book have you seen where someone hits a button and casts a spell? So if you really want immersion, you want to be able to think, and all of a sudden there's a fireball. And that's what they allow you to do. You have to attain a certain amount of attention, and then all of a sudden you cast fireball. There's also a game called Judica. By Square Enix, actually, the same people that do Final Fantasy, for NeuroSky for a conference that I was at. It was basically a first-person shooter where you had to shoot monsters and stuff, except you couldn't see the monsters unless you were a certain amount of calm. So you would actually just be sitting there getting hit by invisible things until you calmed down enough to shoot at them, at which point you would get so riled up again that they'd go invisible. It was a bitch. And then there is Journey to Wild Divine. And really, it is just as new age and mystical as it looks right there. So that is what this came with. You can find this in your more popular hippie health stores. And what this game does is teaches you to relax. They figure out, okay, how much oxygen are you taking in via your blood oxygen sensor? How calm are you, depending on how dry your fingertips are? And they'll do little exercises, like they'll have some glowing ball and they'll tell you to believe in the crystal or something. And you take really deep breaths and all of a sudden the ball starts floating off the ground. And it's an interesting way to train things, and that's really getting toward the sense of self. But first off, it's hokey as hell in their presentation. And secondly, it was written in Director 8 in 2003. So it didn't run on computers then, and it really doesn't run on computers now. However, the Lightstone is still completely useful. I write open source drivers for it. So let's get into my game here. Since I've given everyone else crap about theirs, it's now time to reveal my own. First off, we have the Lightstone. That's my game. Thank you. This was actually going to be designed for the One Button Objects exhibition that Heather curated in San Francisco, but as I am lazy, I am 8 months late for that. So, well, it's happening now. So here's our button. So now we have the Lightstone and our button. And what's tying these together? The readings that the Lightstone is taking. So that's it. That's the game right there. You put your fingers in the Lightstone, which makes you the console. It takes your blood oxygen levels. You hit the button every time your heart beats. That's it. Really, really simple game mechanic. Almost sounds like I'm completely phoning it in and a lazy bastard. However, this is why we have emergent gameplay. Emergent gameplay means when you create a game and set it out there, and people find new ways to play it without you actually designing them in. So, what are you trying to do here? What are you trying to do in terms of getting on our scoreboard? So, we've got your blood ox levels. You hit the button every time you think there's a peak in them. And so there we've identified the peaks for each heartbeat. And there we go. So you hit the button, like the peak happened right here, you hit the button right here. We take the sum of all of these differences in button hits. So as you hit the button, we say how far it was from the closest heartbeat. And if you hit the button multiple times because you're spastic or you have no sense of self whatsoever, we give you a small penalty for that and add like a tenth of what that was from the closest heartbeat. So basically, this is heart golf. You want to get the lowest score possible because you always want to hit the button right near where the peak is, and you never want to hit it more than once per peak, even if it's kind of far away. So the closer you get to zero, the better you have done. And now the high score screen now. Since I was locked into one button, I had to figure out, okay, if you can only use one button to play the game, obviously you can only use one button to enter the score. So what's the best one button interface for lettering? Morse code. Now, the thing is, not everyone is going to know Morse code. It's just a fact of life these days, unfortunately. So what you end up entering is your new name. You will probably not enter anything near your own initials unless you're some sort of really nerdy ham operator or something like that. So you just have to live with the letters you are handed, and it makes for a new and interesting social interaction. Because you're like, hey, look on the high score. I'm AQY. Really? I'm not lying. So now I will play the game. Yes, I will actually do what I said I would never do and demo my own software using my own hardware drivers in front of an audience. Thank you, Johannes. Using the popular armpit microphone holder method here, I will put on the... Oh, I guess I could just use the actual microphone holder too, couldn't I? Wow. Yay technology. Oh, it doesn't fit. Oh, okay, thank you. Well, until then, we can look at my lovely programmer graphics. Yep. I didn't really want... thank you. I was actually going for as minimal an interface as possible, since I did this huge rant at the beginning about, oh, too many graphics, oh, too much audio, oh, too many senses. It's like, okay, let's strip all of those out. Unfortunately, I have to tell people how to play the game. And I'm not real happy about that, because if you can make a game that people want to figure out how to play and you don't even give them instructions, then you have really won. But even so, I had to put in a title and everything else. So, okay. Let me get my finger clips on here. And pray my hardware still works. Okay, that looks good. Okay, and now it knows that I am ready to play, and it will. I just have to hit the space bar every time my heart beats, and I've been drinking coffee and talking, so it's going a hell of a lot faster than normal right now. And I have this set on 20 seconds. Usually it'd be a minute for play. This is actually quite difficult because of all the people staring at me. And also just because you have to sort of sit here and feel yourself. All the interaction you have, there we go. There's the score screen. And wow, my peak finder didn't work that time. Yay! It's a normal software demo. So, it worked sort of. See all these peaks it didn't find? That would be my DSP screwing up. But anyways, so these red dots are every time that I hit the button. And I was I was hitting it about once every other heartbeat, it looks like. So I would actually have a pretty bad score here. And yeah, there's the score up there, which is amazingly low. I can actually bring up a more common case if I just do this again. Yes, it's live coding, game style. Okay, so there's what it should look like. This is a full minute's worth of game, and it, as you can see, it detected all of the peaks, and there's every time I hit the button. So sometimes it's somewhat close, sometimes it's way off. There's four or five times in there where I hit it twice during a single peak, so I ended up with a rather random score. It's hard to get a good idea of the scoring without tons of people playing it, and the funny thing is, all of those people are playing on a completely different difficulty level based on their body and their experiences. So, in order to change this difficulty level, there's all sorts of fun things you can do, like run around the block. I mean, the more heartbeats you have, the more you're going to have to hit the button, but also the better chance you're going to have of actually finding all of the beats. Put it in a noisy environment, like the exhibition last night, for instance, and drink heavily, like the exhibition last night, for instance. So there's all sorts of things you can do that make the outside environment affect the game, but the game is still about the person playing it and them being in tune with themselves enough, be it like holding one of their ears closed while trying to like have their fingers in the clips and hit the button or something like that. Something to detect what's going on inside their game console, their body, in order to get a good score in the game. So, the other game. Oh, yeah. And the source code for this game is right there, just assuming you happen to have a Lightstone sitting around. And I guess I'll be fixing the scoring soon. So the other game that I'm working on that we don't actually have yet for multiple reasons that I'll talk about later. So as Johannes mentioned, I work for a place called 510 Systems. We do DARPA Grand Challenge-like projects sometimes, including automated car driving, and we also, so we built this system right here that consists of a whole bunch of LiDAR and IMUs and GPS and other really neat sensors that you can drive through a town, and we have a panoramic camera on it, so once you drive through that town, we have take all the information from the GPS, the IMU, the LiDAR, the cameras, and we put them together, and they make a really neat looking point cloud on anything that's not this wall. But what that means is we can drive through a city once, take a full 3D mesh of the city made of billions and billions of points that are accurately geo-referenced from the center of the Earth to that point in meters and are accurate within centimeters. Really popular for construction, agriculture, things like that, but also really fun to do stupid stuff with, like take it to furry cons, which, god damn it, you can't see this picture either, because like, there's like a Minnie Mouse right here. So one of the other things we do, though, is make this thing called Prebot. Prebot drove itself across the Bay Bridge to deliver a pizza for a TV show on the Discovery Channel a couple of years ago called Discover This. I've actually got a video of it right here. And here it comes. As you can see, there's no one in the driver's seat. So, yeah, they actually closed down the Bay Bridge for us at 6:45 a.m. on a Sunday morning. And, no, though we have talked about putting a kit in the car before. They had police in front of and behind the car that were weaving back and forth, and the car drove itself to Treasure Island and then popped its trunk open and a little pizza came out. It's pretty cool. So anyways, what kind of video game can we make involving this technology and your body? What kind of video game can we make involving this technology and your body? So first off, we have that NeuroSky helmet that I passed around earlier, and that gives you information about attention and meditation. Like, it gives you a number from 0 to 100 about how much attention you're paying or how calm you are. So what if we could, I just like searched for car in Google Images, and this actually came up on the first page, but it's like so futuristic that it's awesome, so I had to make a slide with it. But what if we could hook this up to a car that drives itself? What kind of game mechanic could you make out of that? And from that, we get the meditation drag races. So sitting in the driver's seat with the NeuroSky helmet on, the calmer you are, the faster the car goes. That's it. You have no access to the pedals, no access to the wheel. You just have to sit there and be calm. That's it. Now, in terms of body as console, once again, hell, that's way better than Gran Turismo, but instead of using the controller to direct a virtual car, you are using your body to direct a real car. So you have to be as calm as possible, and that will make you go as fast as possible. So we're going to have two cars next to each other with people, both with people with helmets on, trying to be calmer than the other one while streaking through a parking lot. This would also be a good. This would also be great for meditation chicken. But as with both games, our major roadblock here is insurance, because we would kind of like to be able to drive our cars for work ever again. So we're working through that right now, and hopefully we'll have this done soon. So yeah, that is pretty much it for me. Those are some of the ideas I have in terms of using these new biometric controls as ways to learn about ourselves through video games versus projecting ourselves into new avatars and other cars and whatever else. What can we learn about ourselves through things that people think are for lazy people? Thank you.
Questions? Come on.
I guess I'm just sort of, you know, I'm thinking about the what you said with the idea of like running around the block to change the difficulty of the heartbeat game.
Yeah.
And the sort of issue of you don't want to have people project themselves onto avatars. But what if you had a thing where, like, for instance, you took all these measurements of someone, and then that fed into the avatar.
So. That actually, there was a project in about 2006 for Second Life called the Inner Life Project that was specifically about doing that. So using the light, that was using the light stone because none of the EEG helmets had come out yet. But using your biometric information to affect your virtual world avatar. It ended up being pretty interesting, but the problem is, when you get into avatar-based situations, most people really want to be their avatar far beyond having any part of their biometrics mapped into them, because it maps your imperfections into something that is made to be sort of, I don't want to say a perfection state, because that's what the game is overcoming the imperfections of the avatar. But even so, it takes away from the binding a little bit to the point that, most people don't really line that up very well when playing games for fantasy.
Makes sense. It's all well and good to get fat in, like, San Andreas. In Grand Theft Auto, when you can eat too many cheeseburgers, your character could.
Totally. Any other questions?
Okay.
No. Okay. Arm spasm.
Yeah, but she, I think because we're having questions now, she really needs a coffee. She was like, I want to have coffee. So we can turn the coffee machine on. Okay. Okay. No.
The mechanic of being as calm as possible in order to go fast, that's similar to the Journey to the Wild Divine too, also, and also a few other things where it's like Pong or, you know, competitive meditation kind of things. Yeah, there's a few other things that are like that. Is that really the only interesting mechanic that we can use for something that can tell so many things about I'm challenging you to perhaps think beyond that. I mean, it's interesting because it's so counterintuitive, and I've played those games and I suck at them because I just can't make myself calm enough in the face of the competition with somebody else. But I also wonder, like, if that isn't overdone, and maybe there's some other way we could use that.
Yes and no. It's certainly been done and done and done since 1983. I mean, that's what Atari was doing with their EEG, and we've all sort of basically done the body is feedback loop game mechanic with one metric. The problem is, even after 20, almost 30 years of doing this, since it's still not a mainstream mechanic, that brings up sort of this weird duality of, okay, has it just not gotten popular yet, or are we doing the same thing wrong over and over and over? And that's what I feel your question brings up, is there's the possibility that we've been doing this wrong over and over and over, and we need to get over the, look, it's an inverse feedback loop, which is easy. I mean, that's the thing, is that that is a super simple way of doing things, but when people aren't used to having their body as control, that's usually sort of like, I mean, that's the pong of biometrics, is just inverse control. And then after that, we can start using more sensor fusion when people, because it feels like, I mean, let's look at tactile controls, for instance. With Atari, people had one joystick, one button. And then you got like ColecoVision, which for some reason gave you a number pad. And then we finally moved to Nintendo, which was control pad and two buttons, and then control pad and four buttons, and now we're up to like two analog sticks and 10 buttons. So that's grown through history, but since there haven't, there once again hasn't been much biometrics equipment out there, we're still at our one button.
I think Asteroids could be pretty interesting with mind control, because just like turning the thing and speeding could be a possibility.
Yeah, but you've got, the thing is, what is turning and what is speeding?
Okay.
When you get into brain macros and things like that, which both Emotive and NeuroSky do, where you have to, basically the game teaches you how to do something. So it presents you with a cube, and it is like, think about moving the cube up. And everyone thinks about moving the cube upward, which looks different on everyone's brains. But it realizes that that is what you look like when you are thinking move cube upward, and it turns that into up for you. So basically the game trains you versus you training the game, because humans are much easier to train than computers. So it's kind of difficult to get left, right, and shoot right now, because there's this fuzziness, and sometimes it can take upwards of an hour to train that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the main reason for using this relaxation paradigm for most of the games is just because these consumer-grade devices are basically only capable of detecting the alpha waves properly, you know? And if you really want to do more sophisticated stuff, then you need to get more invasive and more expensive, I guess. So with consumer-grade devices, we just will see that stuff going on with relaxation. And that's it, no?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and I do work with more invasive devices, but I don't see those coming out onto the market anytime soon. there's also the battle of cheapness of technology versus what you get from it. And I mean, that's a battle that's going to continue on for the next few years. We're going to finally see, and we're starting to see medical equipment fall in price more and more. And hopefully game controllers will come with that to the point where we'll see someone, like, for instance, Nintendo last year announced this thing called a vitality sensor, which is basically the finger clips from the light stone, except connected to a Wiimote. So exact same idea of blood oxygen GSR. However, they failed to mention that at their E3 keynote this year, and it looks like Ubisoft has bought that out from under them. And instead, but the game demos that they showed were basically like Journey to Wild Divine, except instead of new agey sort of like mystical stuff, it looked like Loco Roco for breathing. So you had like these little blobs bouncing up and down with your breath and things like that, which may work for a different, completely different demographic of people, but it's still interesting. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm now imagining like a sniper game where you have to shoot between heartbeats, but because
that'd be awesome.
Snipers actually do that.
I mean, that's the idea behind this presentation. Dude, this is not the end all be all of games. This is, here's some super super simple ideas. Feel free to take it and build on it however you would. So, yeah, it's definitely the kind of stuff I'm looking for and the stuff that I would love to see out there and the stuff that I would play myself. So.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yeah, okay.
What about using like new mobile devices? I mean, most commonly like the iPhone, who has sensors that actually read data already, and implementing that in games. I read last week or 2 weeks ago that they just patent the way to identify you based on your heart rate and voice code and so on, that they can like identify a stolen phone and so on. And is that technology already ready to use as an interface for gaming? I mean, of course there's like but there hasn't come out a lot, and the technology is basically in there, out there already, and most of us carry it in our pockets right now.
Well, the sort of wonderful and horrible thing is about iPhone and the Wiimote and everything else is that once you put that sensor in there, it's going to be used in a game. I mean, that's kind of the interesting thing about all of these app stores, talking about indie games, actually, where now that we have the Wii Network for indie games and App Store on iPhone, anytime they implement a sensor, people have monetary reason to implement that sensor now, because that game is going to be hosted through that App Store, and it adds value to the hardware. And if they add value to the hardware, people are going to buy their game. And if they add value to the hardware, people are going to buy the hardware, which works well for whoever owns the hardware, be it Apple, Nintendo, or whatever else. So really any sensor, biometric or not, is going to get used. Now, as we move from the Novant Falcon thing that I showed earlier, or these EEGs, where you buy things where you buy a controller that's not integrated and they just expect video game developers to use those are kind of falling out of favor now, because the controls cost as much as the game console. The EEG, the Emotive, costs $300. The NeuroSky for game systems is $200. That's far more than a Wii system. Just about as much as like a low-end Xbox now. So you can't really do this control is so awesome that it will augment this console. But if you implement it as a sensor on the iPhone, then yeah, I mean, I would say there's been a lot of games now that have implemented geolocative services based just on the GPS on the iPhone, so to know where you are. And where you are could sort of be construed as a biometric. I mean, it's where your body exists in the universe at the moment, and that's kind of important because that's where the heartbeat, brain activity, and everything else is coming from. So you could actually consider that to be sort of the beginning of it. So you could actually say, this heartbeat is coming from this region, and then you could have like some sort of weird flash mob game where you have to get as many people as possible to like synchronize their heartbeat or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, so the very short answer is yes.
I have this strange feeling that all the time I'm peeing, I'm relaxed. So maybe we could combine like peeing with.
You could mix in like an IV and a catheter peripheral into. I guess what, you know, when you're speaking of all these medical devices, has anyone gone at it the other way and like had something that's like a medical therapy thing that's just, you know, it's a game, but people use it for like physical or.
Yes, I feel that there are possibly some concrete examples coming from the outside of the audience. Do you want to run it around?
I can go first.
Okay.
I'll just briefly say I was working with some a center for entertainment sort of technology in Vermont, and they have a program there to train students to make different kinds of games, and they're focused a lot on serious games, and one of the ones that they were working on, it was a breathing. There's a breathing device that you use to practice with if you have, what is it? The one where your lungs have the fluid in them. Pardon? What? No, not pneumonia. Sorry. It's a congenital
cystic
disease.
Fibrosis.
Yes, cystic fibrosis. Thank you. And so you have to train your lungs quite a lot to just keep up your volume, keep up your lung volume. And they created some games that would attach directly to this volume, you know, breathing meter, and then so people could train with it and have, they'd get further along in their training because they were enjoying it. So, yeah.
Okay. boom, boom. Okay. There are actually already existing for many years. The Russian has done, there's a Russian company that has done games for stroke patient rehabilitation, and that also have been upgraded to many, many different versions. And the software system comes with some hardware, as well as medical statistics for the patient that is for training, for the caretaker and the medical doctor to find out the progress, you know. And the result has been very positive. There are various types of games depending on the severity of the condition. Of course, there are some kind like beyond games already, you know. He can't even understand what is a ball, for example. Yeah. So that's the Russian. Hang on. Then, I have done something. Yeah, for this, I'm not Russian. So, I have make some, adaptation of a certain kind of hardware. I can't tell you because I had to, I'm seeking some fun for making this very big. So, FUND, okay, not FUN. I had enough FUN already. So, and that is in the form of a certain kind of game that I'm doing, and that is also for rehabilitation. And the device that I'm making is no attachment, nothing. So, because I'm a very simple person, as you can tell from my talk, everything reduced to minimum. Okay, so that's a just to update a little bit. Okay, I'm sorry.
And going yet another direction from that too, I should mention, I've done some work with a company out of Sweden called Forceland Systems that is doing open source dental training software using game technologies, using game engines and things like that. So they actually have an open sourced wisdom tooth extraction simulator that runs. Yeah, it runs on Linux. And and not only that, it has haptic capabilities, so you can use haptic controllers with it to actually feel the drill against the tooth, and it makes the drill sound and everything. It's the creepiest goddamn thing ever. You are presented with a score and everything else. And really, I mean, in terms of health games, though, first off, I should mention there is the Games for Health competition, which I believe is part of the Global Game Jam. So if you're interested in Games for Health and indie games, definitely take a look at that. But I really want to take their platform and get kids interested in dental work. Because really, I mean, who grows up saying, I want to be a dentist without just, you know, watching Little Shop of Horrors a million times and singing along? So what if we could take that platform and replace the environment and put an audience in front of it and put it on stage and make Wisdom Tooth Hero? Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I think more than a year ago, Saint-Georges Pompidou in Paris has done a very big games using haptic device, and especially for children. And the haptic, you know, those haptic devices, some is so small, which I use it to make music and make sculpture. But they specially built the haptic device that is so big that the children can go and do anything. They have done a lot of resistance testing and everything. Until they put it in the center, the kids go there, they love it, they play it until the whole device kaput. Then they have to stop the exhibition. Thank you.
I mean, if it's kids proof, it's actually proof, I guess, yeah. A big applause for Carmen Schulz.